Welcome to the Investment Conversation. I'm Tony Fisher.
So, you know, inflation has way overshot expectations, but people really haven't revised the expectations they're building into financial market prices up very sharply at all.
I mean, just taking us a step back and thinking about what inflation does to us in the aggregate, it creates more frequent repricing. And this is treacherous for us as investors because it does two things. First, it makes it harder to forecast. It makes it harder to see what's coming around the corner in some sense. And it makes it harder to value assets.
We continue to receive questions about inflation, whether it's transitory or persistent, how it affects the economy and major asset classes, and what investors can do to counter its harmful effects. Recently, Lord Abbett investment strategist Tim Paulson led a discussion on these topics with partner and director of strategic asset allocation Giulio Martini and portfolio manager Jeffrey Herzog. We present the highlights in this podcast.
So really just to kick things off, Giulio, if we can start with you, what are the certainly you get Google searches, but you hear constantly transitory inflation versus persistent inflation. Can you just talk a little bit about those dynamics of what makes something temporary, what makes something persistent, and how the market's assessing this?
You know, inflation has risen just much more sharply during this economic recovery than anyone expected. And if Fed's summary economic projections that they published in September of 2020 expected inflation to be 1.7%. That was the median forecast for the end of 2021. And the high forecast was 2.4%. Now, here we are through September, and the actual outturn is that inflation has been 4.2%, driven by a sharp increase in goods prices. But services inflation is also contributing. And if you look at what the Fed published in the most recent summary economic projections for their expectations in 2022 versus the end of 2021, it's that inflation will be 2.2% and the high forecast is 3%. So there's this view, as Tim alluded to at the beginning, that we're going through a transitory period of higher inflation, but inflation will come back down back into the range that it's been in roughly since the mid-1990s. Now, I want to emphasize that the inflation we're experiencing right now is coming from multiple sources. The first source of inflation is just extremely strong demand for durable and non-durable consumer goods. Personal consumption expenditures are more than 10% above the trend level they would have been expected to be at based on pre-COVID consumer spending. So there's a surge in those areas that's driven the price of goods up very sharply. We've also had strains on capacity at multiple points along global supply chains. I'm just showing you here shipping prices for containers, which have gone up by, you know, a mind-boggling 50 plus percent roughly after rising 100% year over year at this time last year. So shipping is extremely congested right now. There are also reallocation effects in the labor market as people transition to better jobs, to higher paying jobs in different sectors than they had worked on previously. That's putting pressure on labor costs. And there's a longer term shift in living preferences going on. You know, we've experienced very strong demand for housing. You know, you didn't have to take economics 101 to figure this out. Housing prices are skyrocketing up 20% year over year. And that's going to translate very quickly into rising rental inflation because there's about a year long to 2 year long lag between rising house prices and rising rents. Now, despite all these different sources of inflation in the short term, broad forecast in the markets is that inflation is going to come back down. And, you know, inflation has way overshot expectations, but people really haven't revised the expectations they're building into financial market prices up very sharply at all. And one of the reflection of that is in a model that breaks down the 10-year bond yield between expected increases in future short-term interest rates and then a risk premium that's compensation for the uncertainty of about future bond yields. And that uncertainty about future bond yields is driven largely by uncertainty about future inflation. And so what we see is that that term premium has come up some in recent weeks and months, but it's still extremely low by comparison, you know, to a very long history going back into the early 1960s. And so inflation risk is not priced into bond yields at the moment. And by virtue of not being priced into bond yields, inflation risk is, you know, is not priced into stocks in our view either. So we take that as an indication that there's really a lot of risk in bond yields right now, a lot of risk in stock prices by virtue of their exposure to bond yields, that if we were to get, you know, sort of a change in view on inflation that starts to see it more as, you know, a risk that what's going on this year is more the beginning of a multi-year trend than it is just something that's going to go away in 2022 and then revert, you know, sort of the pre-COVID norm of low and stable inflation. You know, this is clearly a you know, probably the most significant threat to asset prices that exists right now.
What shakes that? What do we think might serve as a catalyst to kind of change some of that market assessment that this is going to be a temporary phenomenon?
Well, I think that's, you know, from the viewpoint of investors, I think it's two major things. One is, I think if we start to see pressure on wages and labor costs persist and increase, that would be something that would cause investors to worry about pass through into inflation more generally. The other thing that I think would be important is for inflation forecasts to continue to undershoot actual inflation. If what we see going forward is that we continue to forecast lower inflation than actually turns out, I think that would be a signal that the underlying environment that generates inflation has changed, and therefore the risk of rising inflation would be greater. And I think investors would interpret that as a rise in uncertainty and a need for a greater risk premium associated with exposure to inflation. So I think those are the two things that matter: labor costs and outcomes relative to forecasts.
Clearly, we're not currently in a stagflationary environment, but that's for the boogeyman out there. What does it take to get into that? Is there a risk of this? Like, how do investors think about that?
Yeah, there are a lot of things that went wrong for the Fed in the 1970s. And if I could just pick my most favorite ones, is that they relied too much on certain theoretical measures of the economy, like what is the normal rate of unemployment we should have. And they were also hit by a set of bad luck shocks, most notably the oil shock. And we also had very different labor institutions in the 1970s, and that would be my third one. But let's focus on those two, because it's basically the idea that you get to a point where people are starting to notice that inflation is higher, and that creates vulnerabilities in the economy. And then when you're vulnerable, you're hit by something you didn't anticipate and can't control, and that really pushes the perception of inflation over the line. And I think that's where we got into trouble in the 1970s. The idea of stagflation really is that you have low growth and high inflation. And I don't really think that we're headed for that in the U.S. because I still see growth as pretty strong going forward.
Can I just jump in on that topic and hopefully add a little bit? I mean, I think it's stunning that, you know, you're looking from the mid 60s to the early 80s at a 15-year period of negative returns. That's a very long period of time. And the reason it's so painful is because of this condition of stagflation that essentially set in. And, you know, it's obvious why stagflation is bad. It's because, you know, it's a period where growth is subpar. So companies are not doing that well on the revenue line. And, you know, inflation's going up. And so yields are going up. So the discount rate you're applying to their future earnings, which are not expected to do that great, is also going up. So, you know, there's nothing to save you in that kind of environment. But on top of that, as inflation accelerates, you know, risk starts going up because as, you know, the Fed starts to lean against the wind, raises interest rates, tighten policy, you know, the potential for a slowdown that's large enough to raise unemployment and decrease capacity utilization of the economy enough to bring inflation down is looming. And so, you know, the reason why stagflation is so dangerous is because it's bad for growth, it's bad for discount factors, and it's, you know, increases the uncertainty premium that investors demand. And so there's nothing good about that. And you can see, you know, how a trend acceleration of inflation ultimately culminating in this stagflationary experience was just so bad for risk assets overall for that long a period of time.
Jeff, there's a lot to talk about with that.
I mean, just taking us a step back and thinking about what inflation does to us in the aggregate, it creates more frequent repricing. And this is treacherous for us as investors because it does two things. First, it makes it harder to forecast. It makes it harder to see what's coming around the corner in some sense. And it makes it harder to value assets in periods of rising inflation. You do get an uptick in volatility in the economy. Given that this is a more treacherous environment, it is incumbent upon us as investors to be more creative and to think of ways that we can be more tactical and active in our allocations. And the way we're going to describe this is through a very simple portfolio of 60% S&P 500 and 40% 10-year treasury bonds. And we've divided this timeline into three eras, which we'll come back to also in the future. And the first era from 1966 to 1980 is what we're going to call accelerating inflation time period. And then from 1980 to 1995, we're going to call this a time period of decelerating inflation. And then from 1995 forward is our lovely and comfortable period of low and stable inflation. And you can see in this first period, you know, our simplistic portfolio of 60-40 stocks and 10-year treasury bonds had a cumulative negative return of about 10%. And then when we got into decelerating inflation, its cumulative return was 103%. And so I think this really emphasizes that idea of being creative. I think the next question to ask ourselves is, well, given that we have this asset allocation problem, what can we do to navigate this regime? And again, coming back to the idea of frequent repricing, we're gonna focus on two broad buckets of exposures that benefit from that. And the first one, the idea to shorten duration. You know, the idea to shorten up duration is very simply to take advantage of the fact that short-term rates in the economy are going up, and we have our three periods of inflation regimes here. Accelerating inflation, decelerating inflation, and then low and stable inflation. And in our first period of accelerating inflation, you could see that, you know, 10-year treasury bonds really didn't perform well, and the risk-free rate really, really held up. And getting to a period of low and stable inflation, which not only was an era when we had conquered inflation fears and people's expectations were very anchored on the idea of a 2% long-term inflation rate, we also had a very solid periods of quantitative easing. And all this really supported the performance of 10-year treasury bonds over the short end. Now, turning to equity exposures, and the idea is basically the same, that we want to try to find exposures in the equity market that hold up well in this regime. And the first one we're going to talk about is value equities. And from a very broad standpoint, value equities have cash flows that are more near in time to us. And so when there is a broad repricing of the discount rate in the economy, those exposures will hold up better than growth equity exposures. In short, value equities are less sensitive to interest rates than growth equities. And so we have our, you know, three regimes, three time periods here again. And in our first period of accelerating inflation, value really, really did well versus growth during this time. And then with low and stable inflation, growth equity really stages a comeback versus value. And this is really an era where economic growth is more scarce and value exposure didn't really hold up. And what I want to emphasize here is that we need some way to pick up which firms are handling this accelerating inflation environment well. And you can think of us as trying to seek out those firms that are trying to maintain their pricing power. And one way we can see of expressing this is through momentum as a strategy. What is notable is that momentum did pretty well in the accelerating inflation stage and also managed very well the handoff to the decelerating inflation stage. I think that really speaks to momentum telling us something about which companies are navigating these turns in the economy very well. And at this point, I think that we've discussed a number of good ways to survive this accelerating inflation environment.
So there's a lot going on in the world of inflation. It's clearly a risk. It destabilizes virtually every portfolio. What can investors kind of think to do actively about it?
Well, I think, you know, Jeff has laid out some factor strategies in stocks that we can use. We think value and momentum are favored during this period. We think the general idea of shortening duration in your fixed income and credit exposures, you know, is a good idea. We think focusing on spread product is good because you're going to benefit from, you know, economic growth in that period, which is something that risk-free yields do not do. And so that'll be a part of fixed income that does better because it has greater economic sensitivity. Although I would add, it is vulnerable to cyclical downturns. So you have to be careful, you know, during the period when you're approaching recession, if inflation ultimately gets high enough to trigger tightening of policy. You know, it's a picture where commodities as an asset class do okay, but it's not because all commodities do okay. It's because some do okay and some don't work during inflationary periods. So there's a broad sort of variety of experience there, and it's really important to be sensitive to the commodities that are in a good position as you're entering inflation. Also portions of real estate because of repricing. Frequent repricing in things like commercial real estate, you know, that very often have escalators built into them for increases in prices. And then I think the other thing, which isn't really focused on as much, is to be long volatility exposure. You know, inflation going up over a prolonged period of time is going to introduce rising volatility into asset prices. And so being long volatility in that environment is a strategy, you know, whether it's volatility in stocks, whether it's volatility in rates, whether it's volatility in FX, you know, that's a strategy that's going to win over time. So it's kind of a cross asset exposure to rising volatility is also something that will very likely work well as you're moving from sort of low inflation into higher inflation.
Our experts will have more to say about this important topic in a future podcast. Meanwhile, you can hear Jeff Herzog talk about reconsidering the impact of COVID on the global economy and Giulio Martini's take on the Humpty Dumpty U.S. economic recovery in other episodes of The Investment Conversation. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite streaming app of choice. Thank you for listening. Gross domestic product, or GDP, is the monetary value of all of the finished goods and services produced within the country's borders within a specific time period, though GDP is usually calculated on an annual basis. It includes all of the private and public consumption, government outlays, investments, and exports less imports that occur within a defined territory. Duration is a measure of the sensitivity of the price, the value of principal, of a fixed income investment to a change in interest rates. The yield on a security is the amount of cash in percentage terms that returns to the owners of the security in the form of interest or dividends received from it. The S&P 500 index is widely regarded as the standard for measuring large cap U.S. stock market performance and includes a representative sample of leading companies and leading industries.
Unless otherwise noted, all discussions are based on U.S. markets and U.S. monetary and fiscal policies.
Asset allocation or diversification does not guarantee a profit or protect against loss in declining markets. No investing strategy can overcome all market volatility or guarantee future results. Market forecasts and projections are based on current market conditions and subject to change without notice. Projections should not be considered a guarantee. The value of investments in fixed income securities will change as interest rates fluctuate and in response to market movements. Generally, when interest rates rise, the price of debt securities fall, and when interest rates fall, prices generally rise.
High-yield securities, sometimes called junk bonds, carry increased risks of price volatility, illiquidity, and the possibility of default in timely payment of interest and principal. Bonds may also be subject to other types of risks, such as call, credit, liquidity, interest rate, and general market risks. Longer-term debt securities are usually more sensitive to interest rate changes. The longer the maturity of a security, the greater the effect a change in interest rates is likely to have on its price. Lower-rated bonds may be subject to greater risk than higher-rated bonds. No investing strategy can overcome all market volatility or guarantee future results.
The credit quality of the securities in a portfolio is assigned by a nationally recognized statistical rating organization, or NSRO, such as Standard & Poor's, Moody's, or Fitch, as an indication of an issuer's creditworthiness. Ratings range from AAA, which is the highest, to D, which is the lowest. Bonds rated BBB or above are considered investment grade. Credit ratings BB and below are lower rated securities, or junk bonds. High yielding, non-investment grade bonds, or junk bonds, involve higher risks than investment grade bonds. Adverse conditions may affect the issuer's ability to pay interest and principal on these securities.
Note to U.S. investors.
The information provided is not directed at any investor or category of investors and is provided solely as general information about Lord Abbett's products and services and to otherwise provide general investment education. None of the information provided should be regarded as a suggestion to engage in or refrain from any investment-related course of action, as neither Lord Abbett nor its affiliates are undertaking to provide impartial investment advice, act as an impartial advisor, or give advice in a fiduciary capacity. If you are an individual retirement investor, contact your financial advisor or other fiduciary about whether any given instrument, idea, strategy, product, or service may be appropriate for your circumstances.
Note to non-U.S. investors.
This communication is issued in the United Kingdom and distributed throughout Europe by Lord Abbett UK Limited, a private limited company registered in England and Wales under company number 10804287, with its registered office at Talis House, 2 Talis Street, Temple, London, United Kingdom, EC4Y0AB. Lord Abbett UK Limited, FRN 783356, is an appointed representative of Duff & Phelps Security Limited, FRN 466588, which is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. The views and opinions expressed by the Lord Abbett speaker are those of the speaker as of the date of the broadcast and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm as a whole. Any such views are subject to change at any time based upon market conditions or other conditions, and Lord Abbett disclaims any responsibility to update such views. This material is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice. It is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. Neither Lord Abbett nor the Lord Abbett speaker can be responsible for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information offered. This broadcast is the copyright 2021 of Lord Abbett & Co. LLC, all rights reserved. This recording may not be reproduced in whole or in part or in any form without the permission of Lord Abbett.